I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. Today, another in our occasional series, Midday on Higher Education, in which we sit down with the presidents of colleges and universities throughout the state. There are nearly 60 accredited post-secondary institutions in Maryland, and among the nation's largest metropolitan areas, Greater Baltimore is the fourth most educated region in America. 17% of area residents hold advanced or professional degrees. My guest for the hour is the Reverend Brian Linane, a Jesuit priest who has served as the president of Loyola University of Maryland since 2005. What does a Catholic education offer to young people who, as a demographic, are drifting away from the organized religion of their parents and grandparents? And how does a Catholic liberal arts education prepare students for a dynamic and changing labor market? Father Brian Linane joins me when Midday starts right after the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you're in the car on the road, be careful. It's still a little slick out there, although I'm understanding that it's not terrible, but be careful out there, folks. Today, it's another in our occasional series, Midday on Higher Education. From time to time, I sit down with presidents of Maryland colleges and universities to talk about the challenges that each of their institutions face and how those institutions are connected to the fabric of the communities in which they are located. Late last year, I spoke with Dr. Maria Thompson, the president of Coppin State University, and last month, Jose Antonio Bowen, the president of Goucher College, joined me. Today, my guest is the Reverend Brian F. Linane, a Jesuit priest who is the president of Loyola University, Maryland, here in Baltimore. Loyola is one of 28 Jesuit colleges and universities across the country. There are several others that are named Loyola after St. Ignatius Loyola, the founder of the Jesuit order, but Baltimore was the first. It was founded in 1852. Before coming to Loyola, Father Linane was an associate professor of religious studies at the College of Holy Cross in Worcester, Massachusetts, where he later served as assistant dean. He has been the president of Loyola University, Maryland since 2005. That makes him one of the longest serving universities presidents in Maryland. We are streaming our conversation with Father Linane on the WYPR Facebook page. You can drop us an email, midday@wypr.org. You can also drop us a tweet at @MiddayWYPR. And a little later in the program, we will take your phone calls. Father Linane, it's great to meet you. Thanks for coming
in. Great to be here. I'm a fan of your show.
Well, and I am a fan of the Jesuits. Our daughter, Miranda, who's a playwright, went to a Jesuit institution in Washington, Georgetown. The brand of the Jesuits, if you will, is an order of great intellectual rigor, a central tenet for ordained priests in the Society of Jesus, like you, the Ignatian spiritual exercises. There's a great deal of contemplation, a great deal of thinking that goes into the acceptance of ordination in the Society of Jesus. How does that inform your understanding of what a Jesuit college education should mean for the undergraduates and graduates that you serve?
Yeah, I mean, a liberal arts education such as we have at Loyola really is about reflection and action. And we especially ask our students to reflect on what it means to receive an education of this quality, a Catholic Jesuit education, and what it means to receive an education in the context of a city like Baltimore, and what do we owe our neighbors, particularly our neighbors who are most in need. So that, again, it's this whole kind of noticing, taking account, reflecting on what you see, what you encounter in the classroom, in the city, and then moving towards some type of action that's consistent with the ethical and spiritual nature of the education they receive.
One of the tenets of Jesuit philosophy, if you will, is what's referred to in the Latin as cura personalis.
Yes.
Care for the whole person.
Right.
How is cura personalis played out at Loyola, and what distinguishes the perspective, if you will, or the approach to a college education in a Jesuit university like Loyola that a student would not find at a university that's not associated with any religious institution?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think with this concept of cura personalis, care for the whole person, I think that that's mind, body, spirit that Loyola we take very seriously. And we like to say that it is the type of an education that is high touch. That is the sense that you get to know your faculty get to know you. Students who have difficulties, there's a great deal of support for them. There's a great deal of leadership education to bring our students out into the world and to understand, you know, their responsibilities, their opportunities. And I think that really the whole the idea of a Jesuit education, and I say this in the orientations for the new students and prospective students, is that a Catholic Jesuit education at Loyola leaves open the question for the God question, the meaning question. Why am I here? What is my destiny? What is human destiny? In light of my decisions, what do I owe my neighbor, particularly my most vulnerable neighbor? And I tell my students, and your listeners can't see me, but you can tell by my outfit.
Well, the Facebook types can.
That's true. you can tell by my outfit the choices that I've made. They aren't necessarily the choices that you make, but it's important to make those choices about where you stand in terms of your understanding of human existence and your responsibility as a Jesuit-educated person.
Years ago, when I completed a doctorate in music as a choral conductor, a friend of mine gave me a badge, a pin that says dangerously overeducated. Uh-huh. If anyone deserves to wear that badge, sir, it is you. You have how many master's degrees?
Yeah, like five. Yeah. A misspent youth, definitely.
Definitely a misspent youth. And you hold a doctorate from Yale in religious studies, concentrating in religious ethics. Mm-hmm. The church, writ large, is in an ethical dilemma, unanticipated by many Catholics, and just shocking to the world at large. Here we have the Pope just last week talking about abuse of priests by nuns and religious women. Mm-hmm. This is over and above, you know, the abuse of children that we've read about and understood that's been longstanding. I mean, as a religious ethicist, given the deficits of ethical treatment of so many of the flock, as mm-hmm. it were, how do you position that reality on the campus of Loyola University, Maryland?
Yeah, I mean, we at Loyola, we had it was interesting to me because I didn't know how attentive our students were to this question, particularly in the result after the Pennsylvania grand jury, and there's so many headlines, and really, I think that the question really was about bishops' accountability at that point, and why that, you know, that there are in every organization. And this morning on Morning Edition, there was a number of stories about abuse in the Southern Baptist Church. There are always people who are going to behave inappropriately, behave horribly. And the thing is that those who are responsible for them, need to be accountable for that. I mean, I've said I could see giving someone a second chance, but not a fifth. I mean, you realize what's going on and you realize the devastation that this causes. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, so many people have said to me, friends, that they really feel for me because, I mean, not that because it takes me away. I mean, it takes my breath away. I mean, I have had no idea about this sort of thing, and it's certainly not what I signed up for. So it's very, very discouraging. And then, you know, to see the lives that have been really ruined in so many ways, and by people who are in a position of trust and authority, and who supposedly their lives were meant to make people better and stronger. And
what are the kids on your campus telling you about their reaction, their response to it, and how is it affecting their confidence in the education they're receiving at a Catholic university?
You know, one of the things, Tom, that I've noticed is that that growing up Catholic myself, and you know, the whole world being. My whole world, from school, born in a Catholic hospital, everything, this doesn't affect them personally. They don't think a lot about it. And they also tend to develop relationships and talk in a way that I wouldn't have when I was a college student, talk about my priest at home, my priest here. They have these very personal connections to these priests who they trust and who have sustained their trust. I think it's really an important thing. And it sounds defensive, but the church has been on this since 1985, and the number of abuse cases has just gone away pretty much. And so it seems like that this is something ongoing, and that there's still this culture of abuse. And the students don't experience that. They don't see that. And so, basically they're very trusting. And you know, I've said that. I mean, is it a good idea to have someone in a Roman collar as the front man of this organization? And resoundingly, yes. I mean, people have great confidence in the Jesuits and in what we do and how we behave ourselves and in us as individuals. So
there's a Jesuit philosopher who I've dabbled in a little bit for various and sundry reasons, a French philosopher and scientist, Pierre Teilhard de Chardin,
yes,
who wrote about what he called the law of complexity and consciousness. And this has to do with the tendency in matter to become, to evolve over time and even in some instances, maybe in all instances, gain some level of consciousness. And it was a very controversial and
extremely
fascinating take on the world. But he talks about authentic love joined with working knowledge. He was a Jesuit priest like you. He was a scientist, mm-hmm. so he had a very solid and acute understanding of the real material world. Mm-hmm. And then he had this great spiritual dimension as well. That strikes me as kind of a metaphor for what's going on in the church right now. Mm-hmm. This yearning for the social justice dimension of Catholicism and Catholic teaching, the wish to live out the command of Jesus to take care of the poor, to look after the marginalized. But then some of those very marginalized people are the most victimized mm-hmm. by representatives of the church. Is there, again, as an ethicist, is there a clear path forward for the church and for Catholics? Because you're educating kids who aren't all going to become priests. Certainly none of the women are. Mm-hmm. And you're educating Catholic parishioners of the future. What do they need to do? And what does the church need to do, both in terms of its administration and its congregations, to turn this around, to change this and change the response of the church that so many people have found to be insufficient?
Yeah, I think that that's a great question. That I think, first of all, that we need to listen to the experience of persons who are affected by the negative behavior, the horrific behavior by some priests in the Catholic Church or some Catholics. And I think that we need to listen to the experience of the people and their lived realities. You know, I think that we cannot... you know, I, for one, was disappointed when Pope Francis stopped the conversation that the bishops of the United States were going to have about the sexual abuse crisis and what steps they were going to take.
And that was happening at a meeting just a few months ago
right here in Baltimore, yes. I mean, you know, this can't be a centralized response, something from the Vatican top down. It needs to be a perspective of the lay people, the perspective of women, the perspective of gay persons, all persons who feel that desire to want to be part of something that is committed to justice and to love of neighbor, but at the same time is extraordinarily fallible.
Is it a challenge for you recruiting students in an age where, you know, according to the Pew Research on Religion, says that millennials in particular, mm-hmm. your age demographic, are less and less inclined
right.
to be part of organized religion, not just the Catholic Church, but any organized church, that their inclinations that when it comes to organized religion completely different than their parents and their grandparents.
Sure.
Does that present a challenge for you in terms of recruiting students? Do they see the university as a primarily Catholic place, or do they see it as an educational place?
You know, I think, first of all, there are a couple of things that I would say, that our religious nature, our orientation doesn't affect our admissions, either on the graduate or the undergraduate. And I think that has to do with the understanding very often that Catholic education is a quality education, and particularly there's this sort of the brand, as you mentioned at the top of the hour, of the Jesuit brand, which is rigor and success. I mean, that as a Jesuit educational institution, we're part of a 500-year tradition, the longest continuous educational network in the history of the world, and in demand in non-Christian countries and around the world to have this experience of a Jesuit education and all that it entails. So I think that's what drives our market. I mean, you know, it's very clear to me when you go to the 11 o'clock Mass or the 6 p.m. Mass, the 8 p.m. Mass, the 10 p.m. Mass, that these Masses are crowded, but it's probably only about 1,000 students altogether, maybe 800. And we have 3,200 living on campus, 75% of whom are nominally Catholic. So it's not really...
Nominally Catholic.
Yes.
Boy, back in the day when I was being raised as a Catholic kid in the 60s, you couldn't be nominally Catholic.
No, you couldn't.
You're either Catholic or you weren't.
No, I mean, you know...
What does that mean?
Well, I mean that they would identify as Catholic, but not really have very much to do with the life of the church.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you know, we see that when we are studying our students all the time. One of the big things that in higher education and education generally is assessment. You know, are you doing what you claim you're going to do? And so we ask them about their religious attitudes and so forth. And, you know, the largest growing population are the nuns, not sisters, the N-O-N-E-S, that they have, they're not hostile to religion. They're not, that they just aren't really interested. And, you know, they'll celebrate Christmas and Easter, but that's about it.
How many of the students are not at all Catholic? Don't even
25%.
Uh huh. Yeah. So, and of course, it's not a requirement to.
No. Yeah. The graduate students would be far less Catholic. I mean, there's sort of still that this network. I mean, you know, that you can see it that you know that 40% of our men, undergraduate men, come from St. Peter's Prep in Jersey City, St. Joseph's Prep in Philadelphia, Chaminade on Long Island. These are all Catholic high schools, and they're. It's sort of forever, you know, my teaching, I've had the students and they sort of look to coming to a place like Loyola or Georgetown or BC.
Yeah, they're sticking with the program.
They like the Jesuits.
All right, well, we will come back and talk more about Loyola University Maryland. It's Midday on Higher Education. We're going to take a quick break. And when we return, we will speak more with Loyola University Maryland President, Father Brian Linane. Our phone number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. You can drop us a tweet at @MiddayWYPR. You can follow me on Twitter at @TomHallWYPR. And you can also catch us on the WYPR Facebook page. Stay with us. We will be right back.
This is your public radio, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us on this snowy day. By the way, coming up tomorrow on our program, an intimate look at what it's like to be a foster parent with Yvonne Wenger. She's a reporter for the Baltimore Sun who wrote and produced this terrific series and podcast called The Wait, which chronicles her family's experience with foster care and adoption. We'll also speak to Joan Jacobson. She's a former reporter at the Sun about her experience with interracial adoption. That's coming up tomorrow on Midday. If you're just joining us today, it's Midday on Higher Education. My guest is Father Brian Linane. He's a Jesuit priest who has been the president of Loyola University Maryland here in Baltimore since 2005. You are welcome to join our conversation. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. You can drop us a tweet at @MiddayWYPR, and you can catch us on the WYPR Facebook page where we are streaming our conversation. Father, let's go to the phones. Janice in Towson, welcome to Midday with Father Linane.
Yes. As Catholics, we're taught to follow the gospel nonviolence, and yet there are quite a number of Jesuit universities that host ROTC programs on campus, and these are programs that teach reflexive killing without conscience. How can we have a discussion about this so that these kinds of programs end? Dorothy Day, who is going to be canonized, was very much against the teaching of military training on Catholic campuses.
All right. Well, thanks for that call, Janice. Dorothy Day, of course, the founder of the Catholic
Worker.
Is there an ROTC program at Loyola University?
There is. We have Army ROTC. We've had it for decades, yes.
And do you find a lack of resonance with Catholic teaching having an ROTC program?
No, I don't. You know, that I understand the perspective of the caller and that many persons feel that Christianity is necessarily a pacifist religion from the teaching of Jesus. As you mentioned, I'm a religious ethicist. This was something I've studied a great deal. I am not a pacifist. I do believe in the just war theory, and that there is a need for the military in the world. I also think, in my reading of the scriptures, it seems to me that Jesus is, I'll probably be crucified for this, but no pun intended.
No pun intended, I hope.
but you know, I think that Jesus is talking about sort of a personal pacifism or a personal love. There's no indication that he was. I think that the story of the curing of the centurion's daughter in the Gospels, the military official, he didn't say, "Lay down your sword, become a pacifist, and then I'll go see your daughter." He went to that man's house to cure his daughter, regardless whether he was in the military or not. And that seems to be consistent in the scriptures and in the legacy of Jesus. So plainly, interpersonal reactions, definitely. And I think that if we understand the Catholic just war perspective, which very rarely is followed through on by governments, but if it is, it is a way of protecting the vulnerable, looking out for the innocent, and doing so in a way that respects the dignity of persons insofar as one can respect one's enemy, or should respect one's enemy.
How would that then inform, for example, a conversation about our presence in Afghanistan, our presence in Syria, or soon to be much less of a presence in Syria, or in Iraq, or in involvement in the Middle East in general?
Well, I mean, again, that it's not really for me to say if these are justified wars. I mean, you know, but they are wars that have been taken on in the defense of to promote certain values and to protect persons and to protect the national security of the United States. Whether that they were right-headed moves or not is a question for historians to decide.
Let's go to Facebook. This is Tom on Facebook who says, "I'm a Loyola Blakefield graduate." That's the Catholic high school up in Towson. "Please ask Father Linnane about Jesuits training people to be, quote, men and women for others."
Well, I think that goes back to my earlier comments about thinking, asking those questions about why am I privileged the way that I am to receive this type of an education, and then what do I do with that education? Not that you necessarily have to go and work directly with the poor, but that you begin to think about how do my decisions, my political decisions, impact those who are on the margins of society? What are my decisions, my practices doing that will lift them up? And so that quote comes from our famous Father General, Pedro Rupe, when he talked about the outcome, what we expect, that our graduates are for men and women, for and with others. And it is this solidarity with persons. And that's sort of what we look, that's what we try to bring about in terms of our educational, the sense of solidarity, not just with those who are like us or who enjoy the privileges that we enjoy, but with all persons, but particularly those who are on the margins.
And with that tenet of, Ignatian philosophy, men and women are clearly on an equal stature. There are many who describe the church in general as a patriarchal institution. Would you agree with that?
Oh, it is. Definitely. Yeah.
And so given that patriarchy, then what is the what's your pitch to young women who may want to come to Loyola University? How do women fit into a patriarchal organization?
Well, I think that for many of our students, men and women alike, that it's really an experience of the community of Catholicism that is a home to them, that they feel grounded in their faith, nurtured and loved, and that they're not really looking at it so much in a question. You know, when I was teaching up in Massachusetts, that one of the campus ministry were having lay persons and women preach, and that's not allowed. And you can give a reflection, but you can't preach the gospel in Mass. And one of the things that, you know, the bishop would get upset, you'd hear from the bishop and all that. And this really isn't the issue for the students today. Maybe it should be. But back when I was younger, it was a very big issue around the way that feminism had come into the church. And there were many Catholic feminists and who raised these really important questions. And going back to the question of the morass that the Catholic Church is in terms of the abuse crisis, it really is listening to the experience of women. I mean, one of the things in the reports about the women who, the women religious who've been abused by priests and bishops, there was a big story in the New York Times, I'm sure you read it, that, you know, that they just weren't listened to. They had to finally, you know, almost go on strike to get the authorities to listen to them, to get the church authorities. That has to change, I think, that in the life of the church, that we're much less patriarchal.
Father Brian Linnane is the president of Loyola University, Maryland. It's Midday on Higher Education. I'm Tom Hall. You can join our conversation at 410-662-8780. Our email address is midday@wypr.org to drop us a tweet at @MiddayWYPR. And we are also streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. Father, we have a tweet from a guy named Tom who says, what about the shortage of priests and the future of the Jesuits? The overall lack of men and women becoming priests and nuns. By the way, I'm a Loyola Blakefield and Fairfield graduate. Is that a concern? Are there many of your graduates from Loyola University who go on to ordination in the priesthood?
No, very, very few. I think perhaps in the 13 years that I've been here at Loyola, here in Baltimore, maybe three or four. It's thousands of young persons. I mean, this is something that we grapple with all the time. I mean, you know, I last week I was meeting with the presidents of the Jesuit Association of Jesuit Colleges and University, the 28 of us, and we're trying to figure out how do we maintain the Jesuit charism at a university campus where there are no Jesuits. At the moment, there are a couple of Jesuits, just a couple of Jesuit universities that have one or two Jesuits there.
How many at Loyola?
12.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
we're not getting any younger.
Yeah. Tell me about it. There are those who say, well, one simple response to this is the ordination of women.
Yes.
And allowing priests to marry. That alone, those two things would, you know, open up a pool of candidates for the priesthood that, you know, would be considerably larger than it currently is.
Yeah, I mean, there are those who say that. I'm not sure where the evidence is on that in terms of, you know, whether that would fit in the Catholic culture. The other thing is, though, that, of course, and maybe this is a failure of imagination on my part, but for the Jesuits, we're an order of men, and we live in a community, and that so that this require for celibacy makes sense in terms of the way that our communal life exists. And so it would be difficult to suddenly admit married men. And of course, there are many orders that have women Franciscans, women Benedictines, Dominicans. The Jesuits don't have that.
Right. And they are, of course, different orders.
Yes.
In general, the value of a liberal arts education is something that I know Jose Bowen has thought a lot about up at Goucher College. And, there, you know, there's a whole pool. Your next-door neighbor, the College of Notre Dame, grapples with this. So aside from the fact that it's a Catholic education that folks are getting at Loyola, there are those who say college should really be a job training exercise.
Yeah.
And if you're going to be trained for a job, you need to have very specific training in whatever particular career. What is, in your mind, the value for a young person to get a broadly based liberal arts education in terms of his or her marketability in the job force?
Yeah, this is something that I spend a lot of time on and think about a lot because there are those people who think that it's sort of I'll tell you a story. I was at a conference with the deputy secretary of the Department of Education. His name is Mitch Zeiss. And he gave a speech. We were all college presidents. It was the Maryland Independent Colleges. And he said, you know, you're teaching these kids these esoteric things. They can't get a job with it. And then they can't pay off their loans and they default. And I just kind of had enough. And I said, you know, the fact is that you're talking to a group of schools that we graduate our students. They may major in English or psychology, but they get jobs and they get good jobs. 94% of our Loyola's graduates are placed within a year, either in graduate school or in a career. The studies that we see, that independent studies show that our graduates, Loyola is the second most highly paid graduate after the Naval Academy. And so these kids get jobs. And I said, you know, your Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos, is protecting these predatory for-profit institutions which really that's the issue, that they're taking these kids in, giving them horrendous loans, and they're teaching them nothing. They don't get a certificate or a degree, and they're saddled with these loans. Our default rate at Loyola is 2.5% on loans. And, you know, it's extraordinary. And the reason that these kids are not defaulting on their loans is because they have good jobs.
Yeah. Yeah. What about the emphasis on STEM? You know, science, technology, et cetera. Do your students need to be convinced? Do their parents need to be convinced that a non-STEM education is going to be okay in the current labor force?
You know, I mean, what our parents need to be convinced of more and more is that you don't need to have a business degree. You don't need to go to the Selinger School to get a job. You don't need to go to the engineering program to get a job. You don't need to be in the communications department, no offense, in order to get a job. What I always say is to allow students to follow their passion, but to make sure from the get-go that they are in conversation with the Career Center to talk about, okay, this 4 years goes by incredibly fast, and then you're expected to be in the world and make your way. And what are the plans that you're going to do this? And I think if you study what you're passionate about, you're going to do better, and you're going to make great relationships and people who'll help you with job recommendations and all of that. I mean, I think it's incredibly important.
We have another email from a listener, or a tweet from a listener, and again, he brings up this moral imperative that he imputes to you, and perhaps you get the moral imperative question much more than, you know, the president of the University of Maryland or the president of a secular institution. And he says that Loyola pays adjunct instructors $4,000 per class per semester, doesn't offer benefits and job security. Is there a moral imperative to pay them more, given the fact that you have so many teaching at your institution?
Well, and point of this is a huge question, and it is a huge ethical question in higher education, because we have seen nationally that more and more of the education is provided by affiliate or contingent faculty. And at Loyola, 81% of the instruction is covered by full-time faculty members. So it's a relatively small number, and generally that they are brought in because of their expertise that wouldn't warrant a full-time position, so that they're, say, in the finance world, and they come in and they teach an advanced course, something along those lines, and then also to some of the introductory courses. But, you know, definitely it's something that I worry about for all of my faculty, because, you know, no one's getting rich in this job. But I do think that there is an ethical question that I certainly think about and talk about with the president's cabinet about how do we address the plight of the situation of contingent faculty in a way that's more equitable.
Jose Bowen made what some people found a pretty radical move, in that he eliminated many of the courses they were offering. He seems to be leaning, if I understand him correctly, when we spoke last month, towards a faculty that is really nearly 100% full-time faculty. He's just going to basically get rid of adjunct faculty to be able to beef up the salaries and the benefits that can be offered to his full-time faculty. In terms of, attenuating the number of courses, the kinds of courses that liberal arts institutions are offering, what do you think of that approach? That's an interesting notion, isn't it?
It's very interesting. And, you know, we looked at this at Loyola in terms of whether the three-credit courses a semester was sustainable, and whether if we dropped it to four courses a semester, which I believe is probably the student load at Goucher and at many liberal arts colleges, that would give the students time for more depth, and it would require fewer contingent faculty members, and it would allow the students right from the beginning to have the experience of a full-time tenure-track faculty member.
Midday on Higher Education, here today on Midday. I'm Tom Hall. We will continue more of our conversation with Loyola University of Maryland President Father Brian Linnane when we come back from a quick break. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780, to drop us an email, midday@wipr.org. You can tweet us at @MiddayWIPR. You can also ping us on the WIPR Facebook page. We are streaming our conversation there. Before we take a quick break, on Mondays here on our program, it's our practice to read the names of the people who have lost their lives to violence during the previous week. We stand in witness to their untimely deaths, and we remember their families and their friends in their hour of grief. So far this year, 29 people in Baltimore City have lost their lives to violence. Police have released the name of a homicide victim whose death was reported the week before last. His name is Jasper Thomas. He was 27 years old. Last week, two people lost their lives to violence in our city. Only one of those victims has been identified so far by the police. He is Cedric Peterson. He was 26 years old. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday. If you've just joined us, it's Midday on Higher Education, an occasional series in which we sit down with the leaders of colleges and universities throughout the state of Maryland. Next month, Dr. Jay Pearman, the president of the University of Maryland, Baltimore, will join me for the hour. My guest today is the president of Loyola University, Maryland, Father Brian F. Linnane. You are welcome to join our conversation at 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org. To drop us a tweet at @MiddayWIPR, to follow me on Twitter, it's @TomHallWIPR. You can also ping us on the WIPR Facebook page where we are streaming our conversation. So, Father, we have an email from Rob who says, going beyond teaching the messages of inclusion and empathy, what does Loyola do to help its undergraduates learn, experience, and grow into more open-minded, sensitive, and non-racist adults? Friends School right up the street, that's a high school, and or an elementary and high school, and Dartmouth College, my alma maters, both insist that students learn foreign languages, volunteer in different cultural settings, and learn from even pre-primary level about the diversity of humanity. Is there part of the curriculum at Loyola that addresses those kinds of things? I know, for example, at Goucher College, where I taught for a number of years, students now are required to do a study abroad term during their matriculation. Does Loyola bake it into the cake the way some of the other places are doing?
Well, one thing I would say with the undergraduates, everyone has to take a diversity requirement so that they are making sure that they are dealing with an underrepresented culture, understanding an underrepresented culture historically or through the lens of sociology or literature history. And in addition, Loyola is well known for our international programs. Fully two-thirds of every junior class have an academic experience abroad. And that would go from, you know, Beijing to London to South Africa. And that would be in addition to the students who do international and domestic immersion programs of service. So that we have a big program called Spring Break Alternative. And the students sign up. They're trained to help for a specific location, whether it's in the West Indies, whether it's, you know, in the inner city of Baltimore, and then they have a specific task they do over their spring break, and so that this we embed this in quite a bit.
What about here locally? You're up on North Charles Street in North Baltimore. What do you see as Loyola's obligation, opportunity to fit into the fabric of the city of Baltimore?
Well, I think it's an enormous obligation and one we take very seriously. I find it interesting, historically, Loyola was not founded for Catholic boys in 1852. If you look at the ad for the opening of Loyola in the Sun paper, it says nothing about Catholic, it says nothing about Jesuit. Father John Early, who was the president, there's no SJ after his name. It's just Loyola was founded for the city of Baltimore. And from the beginning, we've had students, and of course, for the first 100 years or so, it was all men. We've had students of every faith and no faith. And I think that that plays a very important role. In addition, we are an anchor in the city of Baltimore. And, you know, we employ 3,000 persons, many of whom live in the city. And we take our responsibility very seriously. We have the Center for Community Service and Justice, which is celebrating its 25th anniversary. This is a center with 8 professionals who train our students for volunteer work, service work, accompany them on that work, and then most importantly and most Jesuit, ask them to reflect on what they've experienced and what are the causes of inequity and injustice in our society and what must I do to ameliorate them. And I want to mention our York Road Initiative, which is borders our campus, that we're really working very hard. It's one of our great focuses in terms of making sure that York Road corridor is the sort of place that people want to live and bring up their families, and where our young people want to study and enjoy the amenities of a community. So we spend a lot of time and resources. It was a focus of our recently completed a comprehensive campaign, fundraising campaign, to really be in work in that neighborhood, and we've seen some really good results. So,
yeah, and people talk about York Road as a particular dividing line here in the city.
It is.
There are two different universes on the west side and the east side of that thing that's right, you know, behind your school. What is the capacity of a university to move the needle when it comes to economically impoverished folks in our neighborhoods in Baltimore that, as you say, are right around the corner from physically where you all are?
You know, I think the capacity is somewhat limited. I mean, and I think it depends on the resources behind the institution. Obviously, Johns Hopkins is a very, very wealthy institution, and they have been able to do some dramatic things in Charles Village. Loyola's capacity is much less, but we have really worked with the communities, listened to them, not tried to impose our will, and then try to help them develop some greater civic capacity and to get things done in that area. And we've been successful. When they were closing down the youth centers, we were able to maintain the Dewey Center in the Govins neighborhood, which is a mecca for young kids, young people after school, tutorials for athletics, and it's a great amenity in the neighborhood. And so we work very hard.
And you consider it a really important dimension of getting a college education, that the kids who are enrolled at Loyola are involved in these programs in the city.
Well, yes. I mean, for the judge,
is it required or
is it not required? Mm-hmm. I think that would be a mistake to force students who want to do it. I think the students, and again, 2/3 of our students are doing service, 50% are doing something weekly. And for the Jesuits, in the time, the 30, 40 years I've been a Jesuit, we've focused on faith and justice, and that there's no faith without justice and vice versa. And so that we want to constantly be pushing the question of justice with our students, social justice and social equity. So that's a big part of the Jesuit education at Loyola University, Maryland.
One of the things that there is no education at Loyola University of Maryland without somebody paying about $65,000 a year. It's incredibly expensive, and it's sort of automatically exclusive on a certain level given what it costs. Now, I'm sure you'll tell me that, like all the other folks in your position, so many of their students, a vast majority of the students, don't pay the full
sticker price. Yes.
So I asked Jose Bowen this the other day, and it's still confusing to me. Why is the sticker price so high if so few people are actually paying it?
Well, the sticker price really does reflect the educational priorities. And some people say, why don't you just reset the tuition? And you figure out if you're giving out this much in financial aid, just reset the tuition. What happens is, though, that I've seen this in other schools, that it doesn't enable you to keep up with the needs of the education, and it doesn't address the real questions of financial aid that are going to remain even if you reset. I was talking with a young woman just in your green room, who is a Loyola graduate, and she was from Maryland, looking at the state institutions, and she found that when she applied to Loyola and got a scholarship and got grants and loans, that it was only came within a few thousand dollars of what she would have paid at Towson or College Park. And so, and that's generally our experience. And the other thing is to, you know, that our budget is also modeled in a way that we, to your previous caller, is modeled for with a sense of increasing diversity. So that when I came to Loyola, only 8% of the undergraduates were students of color. Now it's roughly 30%. And a lot of that has to do with important programming and also with financial aid to make those opportunities available.
How about the faculty?
Faculty
in
is...
In terms of diversity.
The faculty about 20% persons of color.
You are one of the most long-serving presidents in any institution here in Maryland. You started in 2005. How have the challenges changed for you since when you began your tenure as president and now? What have you seen changing? The problems you're dealing with now, are they different substantially from the problems you dealt with 13, 14 years ago?
I think that any college president would tell you that that is definitely the case. In my tenure as college president, we've started to see that people question the value of a college education. That was never, you know, is it too much? Is it the right subject to study? What have you? But is it worth it? And then also the whole question of the value of the liberal arts, that coming under attack, the financial questions. You know that it's as you pointed out, that horrific number, that it's harder and harder for families to even want to attempt that. And the other thing that, you know, I was at a conference a few weeks ago and talking with a president in Connecticut, and she was telling me, she was saying to what we all know, is that this generation has real problems with resilience. So again, that's one of the...
Resilience,
bouncing back, dealing with failure, dealing with anxiety. You know, I think that roughly 4,000 undergraduate students, we have 8 PhD psychologists in the counseling center and chaplains. And the students need, when I was first a dean and I'd suggest to a student that, you know, maybe they would do well talking to one of the psychologists. And I'm fine. What do you think? And they say, oh, yeah, okay, how would I do that? They didn't see that as in any way because they're used to it. If they haven't been in counseling in high school, they certainly have friends who have. And so these sorts of questions are very central.
That's really interesting, isn't it? That is a big change, isn't it? We have a couple of big fans of yours, Father. Audrey on Facebook and Greg, who emails us, talk about their kids who are at Loyola or who have graduated from Loyola. Audrey has 3 children, evidently, that have attended the school, one's in medical school. Greg says, our daughter is one of the 25% of the nuns, meaning nun, N-O-N-E-S, a Catholic nun, you know, not religiously affiliated, but they're happy with their decision. Jan in Baltimore is on the telephone. Jan, we have time for a real quick question. What's on your mind?
Oh, hi. Thank you very much. Just wondering how your guest feels about the stadium that was built in Woodbury.
All right, you've got a newish stadium.
Newish,
Right behind the Jones Falls. Are you satisfied with how that's worked out?
I think so. I mean,
the community on board with it?
I think so. I mean, you know I hear anything from the community. Obviously, there's always a difficulty when you. I think that the community was much more worried about it than it actually has turned out to be. I think that they thought there'd be students living there or rock concerts and that sort of thing. It's just for our athletic teams, and you know those events are very much under control. There's no tailgating or anything like that. They're very measured. And, you know, it's a great amenity. And when I was interviewing to be president, when I was on campus, they brought me down to show me the piece of land where this would go on. And I looked and I said, these people are crazy. I mean, it was landfill. It was it was a $62 million project, which was basically to structure the foundations of this field. So it's a great project for us and for the community, I believe.
Got about 5 seconds left. Are the Greyhounds going to go to the March Madness tournament this year?
We're hoping. We have a new coach and that they're doing really very well. We're also very excited about our men's and women's lacrosse teams. They're looking really terrific. Hard to believe that their seasons are beginning and with snow and slush.
Yeah, it's upon us.
Go Hounds.
Well, Father Brian Linnane, terrific to meet you, and thank you for your time, sir. I appreciate it.
I appreciate it very much, too. Thank you.
Father Brian Linnane is the president of Loyola University Maryland here in Baltimore. It's part of our Midday on Higher Education series. I'm Tom Hall. That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow on Midday, a conversation about foster care and adoption with the journalist Joan Jacobson and Yvonne Wenger. She's the author of the Baltimore Sun series and podcast called The Wait, about her family's personal experience. That's coming up tomorrow. We want to thank the Diz for providing lunch today. The Diz is located at 300 West 30th Street in the heart of Remington. They feature signature burgers, wings, steaks, and jumbo lump crab cakes. The Diz is open for lunch and dinner with breakfast served on the weekends. You can find them on the web at thedizbaltimore.com. Stay tuned for Here and Now. It's up next after the news at the top of the hour. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.